Hello and welcome to Cave 76, presented by The Sickness Cinema, the only podcast featuring everything important in the realm of unimportance. I'm Rami.
And I'm Frank. On today's show, I am as shocked as you are that Doctor Who is good. But first, Rami.
Frank.
Duck!
Why?
We are under siege.
Is it have anything to do with the recent Sandra Bullock divorce?
I don't know, but we better get Steven Seagal and his cookery over quite quick.
Oh my goodness, sound urgent. Quite quick. Frank, what is the problem?
Well, for some reason or another in the week, we know how much all of you love us. And by all of you, I mean not just our listeners, but the nation. We are beloved. We are beloved podcast personalities, yeah?
That's right. You know, I don't need to carry my passport at airports anymore because I assume people will know who I am.
I shot a Starbucks employee in front of three cops, and they were cool with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, they do get healthcare coverage. So they're
very good healthcare coverage.
Yeah. It's a great package. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I am, of course, referring to, for some reason, the anti-Cave 76 movement that has sprung up over the internet over the past couple of days. Are you aware of this, Rami?
I have seen inklings of it. It's still hard to believe.
Now, first up, we have most recent offender. There is a Twitter account called Fake Sickness 83. And first of all, I am horribly shocked to find that I did not do this.
Yes, we're all surprised.
We were all surprised that I was not the one to start a fake Twitter account for Rami. And also, it's deceptive because many of Fake Sickness 83's tweets sound like they're really from Rami.
I wouldn't agree with that, but okay.
Well, we'll let the listeners judge. I can't decide if I should buy this Ed Hardy hat or this first edition of the Tick comic. Both $7,600. What do you think, tweeps? Rami, you asked me that question just the other day.
That's not true.
Yes, you did. I remember it.
Well, it was not Tick number one.
And what is it? This one is the one that clinches it, Rami. What is it about Cougartown that is so compelling? Is it because I'm a 42-year-old woman? Hashtag Glee.
Okay, first of all, I am not a 42-year-old woman.
Do you have proof, sir? Do you have proof?
Since this is purely an audio medium, I guess I don't. Okay. Fine. But assuming that fake sickness 83 isn't me, which you really should assume that it's not me, not the least reason that the word fake is in the name, what else is going on is making our podcast under siege, Frank?
Well, as you know, those bastards from Whitehall, Kansas are at it again.
What are they up to?
They have formed a group called Cave 76 Sucks. This nightmare has taken form in an email account that has been bombing our email box for some time. Is, of course, a group from Whitehall, Kansas, developed by the honorable, and I use that word in quotes, Jurgens Vandeveld, the mayor of Whitehall, Kansas, who asked us to prepare for our death rape, which I think
just rude.
I think is a punishable offense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's shocking that a public figurehead would take this on a state or a city level.
Well, you know, Rami, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because I've been saying that the work we've been doing here at Cave 76 is going to shake up the rafters of local government. We're changing people's minds one at a time. And you know what? People don't like change.
That's right. That's true. Here are some of the claims that they have alleged that are crimes.
The
grievances, yeah. We have never talked about a single good movie on our show ever, not even once.
Well, Rami, do you want to address that one?
Well, first of all, it's interesting. He goes into a list of films that I can't help but notice all have Michael Keaton in them, leading me to believe that this was – that Michael Keaton was emailing us.
Here's the thing. I'm fairly certain that – all of these, we must have referred to at least one of these movies. There's no way we haven't talked about Johnny Dangerously.
And for sure, I've made a Multiplicity joke.
And I know you love the movie First Daughter.
Well, yeah, it's just common sense. It's a movie about the presidential daughter. Hijinks inevitably ensue.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen, so we'll appease you, Whitehall, Kansas, by saying if you guys have never seen Night Shift, it is the best film that Ron Howard ever directed.
Wow.
I'm not, that's not even a I don't have any qualifying statement that's not snarky or ironic. It's just empirical truth.
What about Apollo 13?
Nope, Night Shift.
All right.
For people who don't know what Night Shift is about, Night Shift is about a wacky Michael Keaton who takes the titular night shift at a morgue with a bumbling Henry Winkler. And I know what you're thinking.
Wait a minute, but the Henry Winkler isn't
he's
bumbling.
He's the Fonz!
Yeah!
No. Stretching as an actor and as a fine comedic actor. And the two, as a side business, open a whorehouse out of the morgue.
Oh, wow, that does sound delightful.
It is wonderful!
I can't get the word out of my mouth.
It's a phenomenal movie. I love it. Take that, Whitehall.
All right.
Grievance number two on this 97 thesis.
Yeah, we'll get through these quickly, folks. I'm sorry. This is important business. They complain that we have two hosts when everyone knows that the proper number of hosts for an internet-type podcast is either one or three. I guess they're referencing the Slash Filmcast, which has three hosts. And I don't know, like KCRW's The Treatment has one.
Well, I had actually heard that Terry Gross does a series of humorous voices. She's never actually interviewed anyone on a podcast.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's almost like a Garrison Keillor type, but more political.
I'm going to say a song about some biscuits. The biscuit company is not real. I love Garrison Keillor.
Three,
having one of your hosts be of the Hebrew persuasion.
Now, in all fairness, Whitehall, Kansas, I have a problem with this as well. But what are you going to do?
Kind of racist, guys. Kind of racist.
Four, having the gall, audacity, and galdacity to make wildly inaccurate prognostication regarding the television program The Lost, which I have never seen, nor do I care to.
Wow.
Now, this I was with you, because you know what? Honestly, Rami is kind of a douchebag, you guys. So I was with you. I could see where they would have problems with at least half of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But all I'm going to say is, email me in 5 weeks, Jurgens Vandeveld.
Yeah.
See what happens then, huh? Huh? When your mind is blown by how insanely right I was.
Yeah.
And for the record, that is the same demand that I made of all of my teachers in high school and both of my prom dates.
There you go.
Yeah.
both. Okay. We're going to skip number
Zach
five.
Morris type.
We're going to skip number five because that's going to be a problem. So some of the signatories for this letter are, of course, Jurgens Vandeveld, someone named Mert Stenck. Mertstank the second, Mertstank the third, Moorish Jim,
Brian Bannister,
Bryn Bannister. I guess they're siblings,
or mortal enemies, both vying for the same name.
Eleanor McNasty,
Silvio the Wanderer Moonlight, Sylvia the Wandered Moonlight Jones. There's some interesting
She took his name.
Some interesting things happening in the Moonlight Jones household.
Yeah, and then there's a second email with more people.
Just more names. IAL Daffodil.
Hattie McFatty. Elaine. Elaine doesn't exist. Diane von Kuderschlitz.
Kanye South. Jessup Bunt.
The Duke of Duchess, which I'm pretty sure is a Mr. Show character. Calliope LaFontaine. Okay, these names sound fake. We're gonna.
No, Rami, that's not true. Actually, the Mechanical Turk was my arch nemesis during my brief stint at the WWF. So,
Hilda Papadopoulos.
Yes. So, what we would like to do to you, fine listeners, the three of you who have gotten through this rant, is you know what? lots of people have access to the internet. So we would like you all to start a letter writing campaign to Mayor Van de Velde.
Who could be reached at?
At cave76sucks@gmail.com. That's cave76sucks@egregiousfalsehood.com.
Or just Gmail. Gmail.com is really the yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we also want to send all of our support to Buck Trendlew, who is the president of Cave 67 Sucks.
who doesn't want...
Who actually really supports us. And yeah, this does guy... does not want to be confused. So we're asking you guys, do not bring the hammer down on Buck Trendlew. He's a good man.
Cave 67 Sucks. That's a totally different thing. Yeah,
he's a good man who cares about sheet metal.
Yeah, that's right. And unions. And also he has a passing interest in movies and podcasts. So he's a fan. So we like him.
Yes. But Mayor Van de Velde, you watch your back. Because the Cave 76 Nation is coming for you.
Yeah.
Well, that was dumb.
Yes, but to be fair, dumb is within our wheelhouse. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. So, you know, we in America, for us, science fiction conjures to mind one thing primarily, and that is Star Trek, long-running, beloved cult series that has entered the mainstream. But over in the UK, it's a different story.
Yeah, Rami, hold on.
Yeah.
What's the name of the doctor?
Doctor Who?
The doctor on the show.
No. Doctor... Which doctor?
No, I don't care about the witch doctor. The name of the doctor on the show that we're going to talk about.
The doctor on Doctor Who?
The name of the doctor.
Classic.
Classic comedy.
Classic comedy. So, yes, with that inelegant Elvis... Elvis Costello. Abbott and Costello homage.
That classic Elvis and Costello bit.
Elvis and Costello bit.
Far less popular comedy team from the 1950s.
Yeah. I remember he would yell, hey, Elvis. Right?
Yes. They would go looking for Frankenstein in Hawaii.
You killed them. What do you think, big fella? Are they dead?
We allow them to live.
Allow? No choice. See, that's all blood control is. Cheap bit of voodoo. Scares the pants off you, but that's as far as it goes. It's like hypnosis. You can hypnotize someone to walk like a chicken or sing like Elvis. You can't hypnotize them to death. Survival instinct's too strong.
Blood control was just one form of conquest. I could summon the Armada and take this world by force.
Well, yeah, you could. Yeah, you could do that. Of course you could. But why? Look at these people. These human beings. Consider their potential. From the day they arrive on the planet and blinking step into the sun, there is more to see than can ever be seen. More to do than... No, hold on. Sorry, that's the Lion King. But the point still stands. Leave them alone!
Or what?
Or...
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, Doctor Who... Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about, right, Doctor Who?
Think so.
Okay, Doctor Who is this incredibly long-running TV series in the UK that has since imported and found a ever-growing cult audience in America. Its new series, or season, as they're called here in America, just started care of BBC America with a brand-new Doctor and a wonderful jumping-on point for new fans who are intimidated by the long, long history of this character. Who's been around, let's see here, since they've had 760 episodes of this thing from 1963 all the way to the present. But you know what? You don't need to be intimidated. It's actually a really lot of fun show. Now, what is the show about? You ask Frank, why don't you give him the skinny?
Well, it is, God, why are you going to make me sound like the nerd by describing it?
Because I had to sound like a nerd for the last 11 episodes.
For the last 27 years.
Fair enough.
The show is about there's no way to describe the show without it sounding horribly nerdy, and I can only run damage control on that.
Okay, here, I'll do it, and you do the damage control. Here we go. All right. Doctor Who is a show about a 900-year-old alien Time Lord who travels around.
Okay, hold on. Let me stop you right there. Damage control number one.
Okay.
He's generally, at least in this most recent series, portrayed by actors that are very handsome.
Yep.
Very winning and likable, and have lots of very important and big deal theater credits, such as David Tennant, who right this moment is starring in Hamlet on my TV.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really charismatic guys.
They're playing like roguish, kind of Bugs Bunny-ish characters a little bit, like Eight Steps Ahead and...
Yeah, think Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man, kind of like...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
suave and fun and, yes. And quirky.
Save nerdiness with a more digestible form of nerdiness. Well played.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so let's see here. He travels through time and space in what's called the TARDIS. And it's shaped like a old British policeman's fire...
Kind of looks... No, police box.
Policeman's police box, yeah. It's like a phone booth. Mm-hmm.
And this thing, he jumps in this phone box, this police box, and he travels throughout all of time and space.
With a companion,
yes.
Usually a very attractive younger human female.
Looking for adventures, and he's fueled by the joy of discovery, and I've already bored myself describing this show.
Right. But here's the thing, though. It's so much better... Than that description, and it's really quite accessible for everyone. I think there's a lot to really enjoy about this show. I know
what you're thinking, listeners.
Yeah.
You're thinking, oh, this is another one of Rami's completely messed up nerdy things that I don't give a damn about. Trust me, I know, because I still feel that way, and I like the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very winning show, and it's truly an anthology, and it harkens back to the stuff that it deals with, particularly in the most recent incarnation. It harkens back to, like, the 60s, late 50s, early 60s, when sci-fi wasn't a dirty word, but it was more of a way of dealing with social issues or relevant, you know, pop cultural events and things like that. You know, like the original Star Trek was all about making a bigger, broader human experience and people from all over the planet unifying and going out in the spirit of discovery.
Yeah.
And this feels very much the same. And there's a running through line throughout the entire series of the infinite capabilities of mankind So every week, the Doctor and his companion...
he's just called the Doctor, by the way. Doctor Who is kind of a running joke in the series, because when he introduces himself as the Doctor, the inevitable response is, Doctor Who?
Let me run some more damage control. It's not as pathetic as it sounds.
There you go.
Great damage control. I did not watch any of the blah... You know, 27 years of history, Doctor Who nonsense.
Right. Well, not
you know, with the skinny, awkward-looking British people wearing long scarves with frizzy Muppet hair.
Yeah, if we're gonna do this thing, we're gonna do it modern and good-looking. Damn it! So Frank and I both started in with the 2005 reboot of the series, where Christopher Eccleston plays the Ninth Doctor.
He's accompanied by the Doctor in all of his incarnations is. Typically accompanied by a companion because he's lonesome in his adventures. And
he wants someone he can play off of and he can give exposition to.
So he always has a companion, usually a female, and depending on the character, they have a good amount of romantic tension that's never fulfilled. He's never been in a relationship with anyone or anything, but, you know, it's that kind of... it's funny, it's got like a moonlighting effect almost, where, you know, it's a whole will they, won't they... But before they ever do, or right as they get on the cusp, they get rid of the companion and pick up a new one.
Right.
Which is good. And it
keeps things fresh.
Yeah, but I want to go back to that point of, you know, this is a socially relevant show that toys in Metafair and uses sci-fi as a way... Metafair?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, that is, of course... Renaissance fair that is entirely aware of itself. It trades in, it uses sci-fi and quirkiness and humor and adventure as a way of making all these issues more palatable in a way that we all kind of wished Avatar would have.
Right. I mean, it's what's kind of cool about the show is that it was originally devised as a family show, you know, that it could be watched by all ages. And I think that's
still
the case.
It still is.
Right.
I mean,
it still is. It can be silly, but it's never dull. And it can be also be really exciting and really dramatic. You know, it's because it's publicly funded television, you know, the BBC puts this on. It doesn't ever really dumb things down. It's not afraid of going there. I don't think
it's fair to say the things that the Beeb puts out are particularly dubbed down. I mean,
that's true.
The Beeb sponsored The Office and
right, exactly.
Peep Show and 100 other things. So that's
right,
that. Yeah.
Right. So my, you know, it goes to show that you know there is a high kind of benchmark for quality here. Even if the you know, I'll grant you, it's not the best special effects in the world. They don't have the largest.
They get better. They do get better.
Yeah,
I mean,
I did try to.
I tried to watch this show. I tried to start watching the show about 2 or 3 years ago. And the first season just completely put me off because the special effects were so schlocky and so bad. But they really get better and they get, you know, because again, this is a show that tries for some really ambitious effects and creatures and stuff on a very tight budget. And they're getting better at figuring out how to manage that.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so much to talk about this show. What's neat about it is because you're moving through time and space, you can really – the show can be about anything and any what.
It's so fun. Like it's almost – it's not even like a procedural or a sci-fi show. It's – yeah, any week is – every week is different. And it can, and the stories can be told in entirely different styles. It can be a very time travel heavy show. It can be like a historical drama.
Yeah, like one week you're with Queen Victoria fighting werewolves, and the next week you're in the future of Earth on the last day before the planet's about to explode. I mean, you have a vast breadth of types of programs you can show, and because the characters are so strong, of the Doctor and whoever his given companion is, you know, they play out in very interesting ways.
Mm-hmm. It has the feel almost of a procedural. You know what I'm saying? And that it doesn't really, it's not, I mean, there are recurring elements and such, but there's not, and you know, every episode you're going to have the Doctor showing up and facing, well, I guess it's not, procedural's not fair. I mean, look, the closest thing you can relate this show to, especially in its modern incarnation, is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Fair?
Yes. I'll put it
in terms of the fact that it's a genre show. Yeah. That appeals to a mainstream audience and has very likable characters, very character-based show.
Yes,
very strongly
yes.
written. And every episode will involve the lead characters being put up against a threat that is somehow that somehow makes a commentary on who the characters are or what the situation is. Like there was an entire episode where the Doctor and his companion were stuck in reality, like a society where the news cycle became all pervasive, you know, and everyone was just everyone looked at the news as like the power in the government and you know had a commentary on that and
like how plugged in do you want to be? They've got that episode where basically reality.
And that episode had that episode had Cave 76 stalwart Simon Pegg as the
villain. Yes. Yeah. A lot of really great. If you're a likable British character actor, chances are you've done an episode or two of Doctor Who.
I just saw Jessica Hines. Actually, I've seen most of the cast of Spaced. And most of the a good number of the cast of Shaun of the Dead. On the show.
Peter Capaldi of In the Loop
shows
up, and he's great.
It's just a really fun show, very well done. And what I was getting to is that every week will be he'll face, and this is the way it's a procedural, Rami, or kind of, if it's not a procedural, it's at least the language of the show.
There's a formula to it.
Yeah, but with it, you know, he'll show up, there'll be a problem, the Doctor finds some ingenious way to solve it, non-violently.
He will find a way for his companion to solve it. What's amazing about the Doctor is that he's described as the man who makes people better. And, you know, he both is an inspiration and yet he's also kind of heroic. He has boundless compassion. Like, even his worst enemy, you know, he wants to find a way that will let everyone live as opposed to, you know, nobody dies. That's his main philosophy.
Yeah, and he doesn't have, like, a, you know, other characters have, like, a gun or a ray gun or whatever he is, a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
It's kind of an all-purpose mechanical gizmo, and that's how that's what he uses to stop... How many invasions would you care to say the Doctor has stopped at this point?
I probably one every three episodes. He stops an alien invasion of some kind, but they're different alien species, and they kind of
usually three, usually one of three alien species.
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing: everything we've described up to this point, seems very predictable, and it doesn't seem like, you know, how is this any different from something like Supernatural or Smallville or
V.
Yeah, better examples. V or yeah, Flash Forward.
Well, it's definitely different than V because it's not terrible.
Yes, this is true. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about Doctor Who is, and again, it goes back to the strength of the character. And I feel like, first of all, this is a character who... we should explain why there have been 11 Doctors to this point. Yes.
So every time, because Time Lords are basically
Rami, let's not give the science fiction reason. Let's give the real reason.
Every time the actor gets tired, they kill off the Doctor and he regenerates into a new body, allowing
it was a clever way that the original showrunners in 63 or 64 came up with to explain why they had a new actor playing the Doctor. And every incarnation of the Doctor, every actor playing the Doctor has very similar traits. They all tend to be very...
They're kind of curious.
Passive, very curious, very intelligent, you know, playing it very smart. But there are different ways in between. You know,
sometimes one
Chris
maybe
Eccleston
like...
played him a bit more as an intelligent soccer hooligan. Like he was really rough and tumble.
Yeah,
he was
a
broody Doctor, and he was ready to, like, you felt he could, if he did punch people, he could definitely. I mean, he's walking around in a muscle shirt with a long flowy trench coat. Whereas David Tennant, who is, I believe, everyone's favorite Doctor, is that right?
Yeah,
Matt Smith has only had
two episodes in America so far.
And he's so quirky and intelligent. And you know what? Like, if I had to, this is the best way I can describe David Tennant's performance of the Doctor, as well as the Doctor character in general. If this movie was being made into a feature.
If the TV show was being made into a feature,
you'd need to find someone of Johnny Depp's caliber to play him. You know what I mean? In that it's a character full of very interesting affectations and a very deep and very funny, has a lot of pathos, but it can also be hysterically funny at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of these, you know, I'm sharper than you are, and I'm going to use all my smarts to cause a little ruckus and be mischievous.
Yeah. And then to be able to turn on a dime and exhibit, you know, huge compassion and huge love, and to say, like, he gets very proprietary about the human race. Like, he's so desperately in love with people and so fascinated by them and just wants what's best for them. It's really quite remarkable.
In the recent incarnation, they developed the idea that he's the last of his species. And he's actually responsible for the extinction of his species during this huge war between his species
and possibly
the most ridiculous villains in the history of anything.
Yes.
They are more ridiculous than Siegfried from Get Smart. They are more ridiculous than Titano, the super gorilla.
They're more ridiculous than Jason Patrick in The Losers. And that's pretty ridiculous, folks.
And these are the Daleks. And this is what's kind of great about the Daleks. They're like weird squid people in these giant, like, metal containers, and they have like a big telescoping eye in front of their rotating R2-D2 heads.
Yeah,
and they roll along, and they're huge. And these were characters that were clearly invented on a
shoestring budget,
1960s budget.
It's like, you know, if R2-D2 like had a trumpet glued to his front.
It's like if you and your buddies were doing a fan film, a Star Wars fan film,
yeah,
but instead of building an R2-D2, you just built an R2-D2 around a guy in a wheelchair. So he's huge and bulky.
Yeah, that would be a Dalek.
That's what a Dalek is. But also they have these like ridiculous, like, again, 1963 era, like very primitive, like mechanical robot voices.
Exterminate.
Yeah, and they're dedicated to killing. And again, these are really, and this is where Doctor Who gets a lot of respect from me, is that in the process of making it a modern show and updating it and putting a lot more money in it, and, you know, they have a lot of CG effects and a lot of really, especially really great makeup and especially impressive creatures for a television show, they kept the same stupid design.
Oh, it's great. It's so great. But what's fascinating, so like, reintroduce the Daleks in the new generation of the show, you know, they play it with your audience expectation of, oh, these things look ridiculous. But then it turns and you see them as this massive, intimidating Nazi-like threat.
Yes, except they're still ridiculous.
Right? Yeah, they're still kind of laughably ridiculous.
I was watching an episode and a Dalek had maybe one of the head Daleks had my favorite line of anything I had ever heard. He was arguing with, again, I kid you not, gentlemen, he was arguing with one of the other nemeses, a Cyberman.
Which, again, a cheap-looking design.
He looks like C-3PO if you made him out of tinfoil.
Yeah.
And he was arguing with a Dalek. Dalek says, "There is only one thing you are superior at than we are." And the Cyberman goes, "What's that?" And the Cyberman and the Dalek goes, "Dying!"
That's right. Don't mess with the Daleks.
Oh, it's so dumb. It's amazing.
It's awesome. It's so entertaining. It's so supremely entertaining.
"You are better at us than dying." God. Huh. Yeah, and again, it's that real, and I think we underestimate, particularly people on the outside in Americans, really underestimate, it's like a huge deal. Like,
yeah,
it's part of the national culture of the UK. I mean,
it's like,
he's their James Bond. Well, that doesn't mean, yeah, Doctor Who is England's British James Bond.
No, I'll tell you what he is, Frank. He's their Superman. But more than that, yeah, because he, you know, he's basically like a god who goes around and solves people's problems.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the, you know, what the show means and what the franchise and the cultural impact.
Sure,
and I mean, Star Trek is similar. It's like, you realize that, again, because this was meant as a kid show, so these ridiculous looking metal wheelchair guys are like part of the popular subconscious of the UK.
Right.
And like, because
British,
it's a kid show, children have nightmares about these things.
Yeah. It's kind of wacky country over there, huh?
Yeah, they do love terrifying.
Yeah. Like they've got, it's like, you know how Lost will do like a 2 hours of, hey, here's what you've learned about Lost and here's a special on Lost. They do that for Doctor, they've got a like behind the scenes of Doctor Who on every single week on the Beeb. It's ridiculous.
And you know, I really do like it. And the reason that we're talking about this now, the reason I got by is because they just announced, debuted the fifth Doctor. No, the 11th Doctor, excuse me.
11th Doctor, yeah.
But the third Doctor of the modern run. Yep.
Yes. Yeah,
And that's Matt Smith. Matt Smith's premiere. Oh, and also there was a big dynamic shift. We forgot to mention the Doctor Who reboot with Eccleston and David Tennant was masterminded by Russell T. Davies, who's very famous for having created the TV show Queer as Folk, which the Showtime original was based on. It's a very popular series, critically lauded series in the UK. Yep. And to go from a very tense, dramatic relationship show to this ostensibly silly sci-fi show should give you some idea of what the grounding is for this reboot. And he is just handed it off to Stephen Moffat, who wrote several episodes.
Some of the best episodes, most people would argue, of the reboot.
During the Davies reboot. And here's the thing about Doctor Who that I also really like, is they really do put an emphasis on the writing, so much so that every episode begins with the episode's title, which is rare, and then also, as I say, the episode's title and by the writer.
Yeah, can you imagine that ever happening in America?
I mean, it's very infrequent. Every now and then, like, you'll watch an Office and it says by Steve Carell, and you're like, oh my god, you know, or they'll slip something out like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so now Stephen Moffat has taken the reins. Stephen Moffat was responsible for
coupling, but that,
which is terrible. Which is my least favorite thing. And yet
the American one.
No, the British one. I couldn't stand that show.
But he also did the amazing.
I was watching. Here's the thing. I watched both series of The Office, the UK Office, in senior year of college. Yep. On DVD, when they came out on DVD, I'm like, I need more. I need something else. And someone suggested, you should try coupling. And I was like, oh. It's like a Friends knockoff, and it's like British. And...
A little more sexier, a little more. They can get away with more. Mm. He's also responsible for the amazing Jekyll miniseries.
I hear really good things about
that. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I got our friend Matt Phillips to watch it. He loved it.
So they've taken over, and with a more... It's interesting. I feel like a more fairy tale esque tone. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It definitely is trying to evoke a fairy tale very consciously.
Yeah.
In this show, and so they've got this amazing kind of time travel-y story that sets up the Doctor with his new companion, who should I even say, or better
yeah,
that
say.
I should go? Okay. So he meets her when he's a little girl, right after he's become after David Tennant is transformed into Matt Smith into the new Doctor. He goes and he meets Amelia Pond as the little girl, and he's like, okay, I'll be back in 5 minutes. And he
played
jumps
by
in
Karen Gillan, is that right?
Karen Gillan, yeah. And he jumps back in the TARDIS to repair it, ostensibly, and then disappears for 15 years, 16 years, for a very long time. And when he comes back to this house to, you know, see her again, this little girl who helped him kind of get used to his new state of being, she's this grown, very attractive lady. And
she had convinced herself that this man that she met 15 years ago or however long ago was her imaginary friend. And she had gone through therapy to try to forget him, and she had drawn pictures of him.
And she kind of had a crush on him growing up. She was like her magical prince.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got a brand new dynamic that we've never really seen between a Doctor and his companion before.
I don't know about that. I feel Tennant had that with
Martha Jones and
Billy Piper.
Oh, with Rose and
That was a huge thing. With his first companion from this series, there was a very big, like, clearly loved each other and clearly had a thing, but they never actually. I think way more so. I mean, again, we're only two episodes in the U.S.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, how it may unwind is different. He's also got an element of – we found out at the end of the episode that she agrees to join the Doctor on his journeys, and, you know, that's fine.
And one of the other things about he travels through time so he can return her back to whenever
he wants. But she is leaving, we find out, on the night before her wedding. So that's also – there's also that kind of going on.
Yeah.
Which also, by the way, evocative of another companion who the Doctor kind of crashed her wedding, and that's Donna Noble. That would be my favorite companion, by the way.
I'm just starting the Noble.
The Donna stuff now, yeah. She it takes a while to warm to her, but I assure you, you get some good ones in there.
Of course, it premiered to huge, huge numbers. The biggest numbers BBC America has ever had.
Yeah, because I think it's starting really... to find an audience in America, especially because now that it's available on Netflix, watch instantly.
Oh my god, that's how I've been getting through it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's – I really like the fairy tale vibe. I wasn't too impressed with his sci-fi episode. Yeah, I mean, but every time there's – every series of it seems to have a very clear pattern, or at least whenever they from what I've seen – they have whenever they gain a new companion, it's they introduce the companion in one episode based in present day. Then the next episode is they'll go to some crazy future version of the human race. Mm-hmm. And then the third episode is they meet a famous historical figure from Britain's history.
This season is no
met,
different.
They've
and
met
it looks
Shakespeare.
Amazing. Yeah.
They've met Queen Victoria. They've met
Agatha Christie.
I really liked. There was the episode where they meet Shakespeare.
Oh, the Shakespeare one is amazing.
He meets. They also meet Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
The first, and we discovered there's a long-standing hatred between the Windsor family and the Doctor throughout all of time and space, which is great. Great. And they introduced Liz Ten in the most recent incarnation. The most
played
recent
by
episode.
Played by Hotel Rwanda's Sophie Okonodo.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, they get really big talent, and everyone gets really excited about this, regardless of that. I went back and watched that scene in Extras when Ricky Gervais says the last thing I want to do is play some stupid villain of the week in Doctor Who, and they cut to David Tennant killing a slug version of Ricky Gervais pouring table salt on him. Really freaking funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I like the new direction, and again, just as with any new James Bond, there is intense scrutiny around every new Doctor.
Yeah.
And I think he's fine. He's physical. He's not so different, I think, from David Tennant's performance, or at least what he brings to it is not so terribly different from that kind of wiry, hyperactive. Am I wrong? Is there something I'm not
saying?
No,
at the moment, I think to ease the transition, I think they're making them seem a little similar. I think they did something. If you go back and you watch the first 10 episodes, he kind of reminds you a little bit of Eccleston. And then as it spins out, he kind of develops more into his own. I will say this about Matt Smith. He plays it more alien than the previous two Doctors have. Like everything.
See, here's the thing. And I know why that is. And I know exactly why that is.
Yeah. Because he's an alien.
Because he looks so weird.
Yeah, he's a weird-looking dude.
Matt Smith looks weird. He's got, like, big, like, Robert Pattinson hair.
And, you know, for the kids.
A huge forehead. And here's the weird part. No eyebrows. That's what freaks me out about it the most, is that you just look, and it's just a straight line of flesh tone from his eyelid straight up his enormous Rushmore of a forehead to a thicket of impossibly large hair. You want to hear my Doctor Who theory of the week, since we don't have a Lost theory of the week?
Yeah, please.
Matt Smith's freakish appearance.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a relative unknown prior to this is due to the fact that David Tennant hasn't actually left.
And this is just the greatest acting performance of all time.
But what they're doing is every day he shows up under cover of darkness at 2 a.m. and goes through a four-hour-long mediocre latex application process.
Well, they also totally changed his body, too.
So he's in a rubber suit. He's a David Tennant's a small guy. This is the role of the acting challenge of a lifetime. And somewhere around the second-to-last episode, Matt Smith is going to look directly into camera and peel off his Matt Smith mask, and it's just going to be David Tennant.
Wow.
And we'll all be floored, and he'll win 100 BAFTAs.
Wow. I don't even begin to know what to say to that.
If you want to hear more Doctor Who theories of the week, just write in, and I'm sure we'll have a replacement installment for Lost.
Yeah, you don't want to hear the theme song to that one, guys. All right. I think we've exhausted this topic.
But yeah, so really great.
Doctor Who.
It's on Netflix.
Check it out. BBC America. And you can watch new episodes on BBC America every Saturday night. And let's face it, if you're a hardcore Doctor Who fan, you're at home Saturday night to watch Doctor Who.
And again, it's, you know, they started fresh again. And
the nice thing about
the show is, like, there isn't a lot of really heavy continuity in any given episode, let alone any season.
Right.
You know, so you can jump into pretty much any episode cold. But if you feel like you want to be a completist, start with the Matt Smith version. And then if you want to see more, you can go back. And it's all on Netflix. Watch instantly. And if you can, avoid Torchwood.
Aww.
These quote-unquote sexy spin-off series where everyone is bisexual and everyone is doing it with everyone else.
That's not why we don't like it, by the way. We should point out that.
No, like, it's not the bisexual thing. It's the over-sexualization where everything about fighting crime, everything about fighting aliens is sexy. And it's kind of like, I made this comment on Twitter. It's as if they just took Doctor Who, took away his TARDIS, took away his ability to go to any episode or any genre whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Removed that. And also removed his quirkiness and replaced him with a brooding average American actor.
Oh, well, we can make that argument.
I don't think John Barrowman's very good.
Oh. What? He's bisexual Han Solo. How can you say no to that? All right.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I'll put it this way, Rami.
Yeah.
I got through the first two seasons of the new Doctor Who in like 3 days.
Yeah.
And then I switched over to Torchwood. And yeah. That sucker, one season of Torchwood took me 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay, guys, this week Doctor Who travels back to World War II to help Winston Churchill fight the Daleks.
Who are you to resist it?
Yeah, I know. Seriously, guys. All right, so we've got some new questions from all our wonderful listeners out there, and we're very excited to answer them. We've got some really good ones this week.
Yeah, so first one we have up is from Danielle. And okay. She wants to know, what is your guilty pleasure romantic comedy? As men, you must publicly denounce most romantic comedies, but is there a love for Hugh Grant behind your buff exteriors?
Wow. I guess she's never seen either of our exteriors.
This is a tricky question for me because I think it's fair to say, Rami, that we are both shameless.
Yeah,
as is evidenced by our 35-minute segment on Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think we're not the sort to immediately close ourselves off from a romantic film. I would immediately close myself off from a dumb romantic film.
Yeah, I mean that's what I was thinking. Like maybe I should try to figure out what like really bad romantic comedy that I don't like. You know, because my favorite movie of all time is a romantic comedy. The Apartment, you know, yeah. I'll definitely go to bat for When Harry Met Sally and even Love Actually, which I know a lot of people are like, oh, yeah. God. I even kind of like Notting Hill, you know, it's not.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you just said two of the ones I'd have said, which would be, Notting Hill and
Specifically, she mentions Hugh Grant. I actually really like Hugh Grant. I think he's got a really nice persona. I've never seen the Bridget Jones movies because that's one thing I just can't bring myself to do.
Sure.
But I really liked even music and lyrics. I thought that was like Drew Barrymore's best thing in years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about this. I'm having trouble coming up with like a bad, like I could come up with a list of bad ones. I particularly like watching, like Drive Me Crazy.
Huh. Oh, I'll tell you a good one. I think 10 Things I Hate About You is really solid. I think it's good.
I wouldn't call it a guilty pleasure movie. You know what I mean? It's like a movie I would be ashamed about watching. Like a movie I've watched. I'm trying to think of a movie I've watched like 100 times on HBO that I'm ashamed to say I never shut off.
I'll tell you one that I think it's a great movie. It's romantic. It's very sweet. I think In Her Shoes from 2005.
I saw like 4 minutes of that, but didn't that have like really good notices? Hanson?
Yeah, it is. It is
Curtis Hanson who wrote L.A. Confidential.
Directed L.A. Confidential.
Who wrote L.A. Confidential?
The guy who did A Knight's Tale. Oh, A Knight's Tale.
Knight's Tale's good, too, and it's not a romantic comedy.
It's true. It's funny, and it's got romance in it, but...
Yeah, our lack of shame really puts us at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I know.
In the guilty pleasure. I'd be hard-pressed to find guilty pleasures of any genre, because...
Yeah, I think you kind of hit a point as a fan where you're like, do I even need to feel guilty about liking it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's certain things. I mean, it's funny for us. It's almost like a different thing. It'd be like, Like, if either of us liked Avatar, we'd have to say that was a guilty pleasure because it's so kind of, like, dismissed by the film elite. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. God, I've pulled up a list of romantic comedies. I'm trying to look for one that would be, I don't know, Down with Love. I really like, but I think
that has a lot going for it.
Yeah, it's got a fantastic. This is the Renee Zellweger, Ewan McGregor movie that's set in kind of like a Rock Hudson Doris Day kind of setting.
Directed by Peyton Reed, who also directed Bring It On and a couple of TV shows that were.
Yeah,
huge.
He was a major director on Mr. Show.
Yeah.
God, you know, this is. I'm not seeing them. I don't know. Maybe if Danielle wrote us back with like a multiple choice of here's 10 or here's 5 romantic comedies that like are shameful. Like, I'll tell you what I don't like. I'd say the bulk of Kate Hudson's output is pretty awful. And if I was a woman, I'd be pretty embarrassed to be represented.
I don't think I've seen a Kate Hudson movie that wasn't Almost Famous.
Other than Almost Famous, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Oh, no, but I wouldn't watch it. Like, I've seen romantic comedies.
Yeah, exactly. We
saw half of Sex and the City.
I saw all of Sex and the City. Yeah. I didn't like it, though.
Terrible.
We saw Monster in Law opening day because Will Arnett.
Because of Will Arnett.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that was an unfortunate.
that is an unfortunate
decision.
I remember we were actually quite enthusiastic because I think that was the first.
Yeah, Will Arnett hadn't done anything, and we were totally like we had just discovered Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And,
oh, how young we were!
Yeah, can't believe we paid money to see Monster Squad in a theater. Monster
Squad. Oh, we wish we'd seen Monster Squad in a theater.
I was actually thinking of Monster Squad the whole time. Monster Squad. I know I was watching Monster in Law, but I was thinking of you the whole time, baby.
Now, I mean, listen, I guess the one that I guess women flock to are those Richard Curtis British films like Love Actually.
I like all those. Richard Curtis, who's writing the season on Doctor Who.
You know who else is doing it on Doctor Who?
Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman,
yeah,
who you guys all know is from Coraline, the writer of Coraline.
Yeah, he wrote Coraline, wrote Stardust, and...
He was one of the writers on the Beowulf movie. It'll be great. Yeah. But let's get off Doctor Who again. God, I don't know. I think Married to the Mob I really liked.
I think we've given enough examples of films that we should be ashamed that we like.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and yet we don't. Yeah. All right, next question. But thanks for the question, Danielle.
Yeah, thank you, Danielle. Very nice.
All right, this is from David, and he wants to know who tops out your list of all-time favorite president characters in film, and who has yet to be employed in such a role who would do an excellent job? Who would be an absolute disaster?
Okay. Well, let's see here. I definitely would say when I first heard this question, the image
You
that
are not allowed to say
yeah.
Jed Bartlett.
No, I wouldn't, because that would be a TV answer, and this
okay,
is for...
Okay, so we're limiting specifically to film.
Yeah, exactly, it's film. So the first face that popped in my head was Jack Nicholson in Mars Attacks.
Good.
Which is, I certainly think, one of the most fun presidents to watch.
I have a counter-argument to that.
Yeah.
President Camacho from the Mike Judge film Idiocracy.
yes, played by Terry Crews.
I love President Camacho.
Yeah. You could see him, Terry Crews, who plays President Camacho in the Old Spice commercials. Now he's the power guy.
But he's not the guy on a horse.
He's not the guy on a horse.
Who I have accepted as my own personal Jesus.
Yeah, look.
A picture of what Jesus would look like, that dude on a horse holding diamonds, talking to my lady.
But Frank, look down. The diamonds are now tickets to that thing you always wanted.
Thanks, Jesus. See, he even has the powers of Jesus.
Oh, wow. We're going to get so many angry emails for this one.
Bring it on, Whitehall, Kansas.
Okay. I'll tell you another great fictional president. Jeff Bridges in The Contender. His president loves sandwiches.
Yeah. That's definitely good. Oh, well, Rami, go back and explain who Jack Nicholson's oh, character is.
Well, Jack Nicholson plays President James Dale, and after Mars does its titular attacking, he comforts the people of America by saying, "We still got 2 out of 3 branches of government working for us, and that ain't bad."
Right. Yeah, he's very smarmy.
Oh yeah, he's awful.
Caricature-y. You know who was supposed to be like, and I wished was better. And the reason that I went to see this movie was Steve Colbert when he played the president in Monsters vs. Aliens.
Yes.
And
yes.
They made him look like a combination of Colbert and Reagan. Yes. Or no, yes. No, he looked like a combination of Colbert and like FDR.
Yeah, yeah, he's got the glasses, and
glasses
the
cheek. And the jowly thing going on, and
yeah.
I didn't think that. I was really hoping for him to be better in that role.
Yeah,
he even had like a title in the credits, and Stephen Colbert as President of the United States,
which I'm sure got a laugh.
Yeah, yeah. From me, the lone person in the theater.
Yeah.
Mommy,
why is that man laughing?
Don't look at him in the eyes, son. The reason President Camacho is excellent, Idiocracy, for people who don't know, is a great satire about essentially what happened if all of the intellectual people in the world talk themselves out of having a family, or they're you know, they were too concerned with other things to procreate, and so the world just became entirely populated by the stupidest, most mediocre,
most fundamentalist
wretches of humanity.
I gotta say though, Frank, you look around at some of the stuff in Idiocracy, and you look around now, and there's some uncomfortable similarities.
Their number one television show is "Ow, my balls." But President Camacho is a one-time professional wrestler who wears he's an enormous he's got long flowing hair.
He rides around in a motorcycle,
holds death monster truck rallies. It is a complete idiot, but he legislates with a bevy of half-clothed women in American flag bikinis, and also guns, lots of guns. And he is absolutely wonderful. How about legitimate presidents, Rami? How about not comedy presidents? You got any?
Well, Bridges was pretty serious. President James Marshall, who had a staunch "no terrorists on my plane" policy.
I said serious, Rami.
Oh, that was serious? Like, are we talking about actors who've played real presidents?
No. I'm talking, because I was about to say President Whitmore.
Oh, yes. Serious presidents.
Yes.
President Whitmore, of course, is...
Because we will not go quietly into that night. We will survive. Because today is our Independence Day. Cheers in America. Cheers also in Paris. Cheers somewhere in Asia.
Wow. And to think they weren't going to make a sequel of that movie. Frank is, of course, talking about Bill Pullman's character in Independence
Day. I don't see how
Day.
Anyone couldn't know who I was talking about there.
Oh, there's a whole generation of kids who have not been exposed to that quote-unquote serious
blasphemy,
president.
I say. Blasphemy. I think we should add the script to the tail end of the New Testament.
Wow. Library of Congress.
As the cheerful Hollywood-ified ending to the Book of Revelations.
There you go. Makes sense.
Who else? There's got to be some others. What are the other parts of that question?
Who should never play president?
Oh no, who has never played president who would do an excellent job?
Tracy.
Oh,
Morgan.
And you know, and here's a. I like it. Here's a cheat, but what's his face? Michael Douglas in An American President. It's a cheat just because it's just Jed Bartlett.
Yeah, it really is just us. It's single widower.
Yeah,
Jed
American President. If you haven't seen it, it's Aaron Sorkin's White House romantic comedy.
So good.
Yeah, and it's very charming, and it sounds exactly. He made it before The West Wing.
It was kind of a test run for West Wing in many ways.
Yeah. He was working on some other series, and then they said, "Why don't you just make a series of The American President?" And he's like, "Fine."
But I'm only going to make the first four seasons.
That's how Aaron Sorkin rolls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he'll be lucky if he gets another four seasons on anything ever again.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, well, no, he's writing features now.
Yeah, sure. He's in the features now.
Who would do an excellent job? Who do I trust implicitly, Rami?
Shatner?
No, William Shatner would be a terrible president. I'm sorry. He would not be good.
Johnny Depp?
Eh.
How about, let me see. Who's good? Who's never played president?
James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones.
That's a solid choice. Yeah, that's odd. You'd think he would have.
Well, Morgan Freeman has the...
Yeah, he's got the monopoly on black presidents.
Isn't that weird how, like, 10 years ago, Morgan Freeman being cast as a president in Deep Impact or anything else was seen as, like, crazy revisionist future?
Yeah.
Even, like, 3 years ago, like, having Dennis Haysbert play a black president on 24.
Yeah, or Chris Rock in...
Head of State.
Head of State, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a little teary at the end of that movie because I'm like, oh God, it's so sad because it'll never happen. And then it did, and that was great.
You're an idiot.
It was great.
You know who I'd like to see play president? Alan Rickman.
Ooh, the president of Europe. they have that, right, over there? They've got president of Europe?
I think so. Tony Blair, president of Europe? That's what Stephen Frears tells me.
Yeah, exactly.
Inside baseball.
I'll explain it in the show notes.
Absolute disaster. Absolute disaster president.
Larry the Cable Guy. We kind of already had that.
I'm sure. I'm sure that movie is in development somewhere. Or has been at some point.
Get her legislated.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yeah. But legislated is spelled with a J.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Every single occupation you can think of.
Uh-huh.
Has been inserted into Larry the Blank Guy
right.
as a Hollywood spec script.
God.
Astronaut, mm-hmm. Dinosaur hunter, mm-hmm. Everything.
I would probably not want to
see... Those were my two careers that I was able to pull out. Astronaut, dinosaur hunter.
There you go.
Yep.
I would see a Dinosaur Hunter Larry the Cable Guy movie, probably. Who else would
Larry
be
the Car Guy?
I could do without Rogan as president. He's not because I don't like him, just because
That's interesting. Who would you get if Apatow did a movie that they had to cast a president? Who would you want him to get?
Oh, Paul Rudd.
Richard Jenkins.
Oh, Jenkins would be a great president in Apatow or non-Apatow.
Yeah, try to think.
John C. Reilly, not a good president.
Yeah, John C. Reilly, terrible president. Dewey Cox, outstanding president.
Gary Busey, terrible president.
That's just true. That's just a true statement.
I'd be terrified of a Jackie Earl Haley president.
All right, good question.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Moving on. Katie wants to know, is Robin Hood going to be good?
I assume she's talking about the Russell Crowe Robin Hood that's directed by Ridley Scott that's coming out in 2 weeks?
Yes. And the answer is no. Moving on.
Wait,
that's not fair. Yeah, no, I got a feeling like it's I don't know.
I think the
There's a lot that changed over the course of the production of that movie.
Yeah, it was going to be a very different movie.
Yeah, it was originally, for people who are not in the know, Ridley Scott's Robin Hood movie starring Russell Crowe was originally called Nottingham.
Yes.
And the premise of the film was that it was the whole Robin Hood story from the point of view of the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Already a very interesting movie and a reason to do this again.
But then the twist of it is that the Sheriff of Nottingham is actually secretly Robin Hood.
Yeah, and it's all like a big
fighting Prince John.
Yeah,
from the inside, which sounds not at all like the type of movie that Ridley Scott would make. I mean, here's the thing: Robin Hood sounds exact. I mean, you look at the trailers for Robin Hood; it looks exactly like Gladiator,
exactly,
Kingdom of Heaven, and all that nonsense. And good. I mean, he does it well.
Yeah, he does it very well.
And he's
but...
ancient, too. It's amazing that he's still so full of vigor and as a director. I mean, he's a very energetic director. He's like 72 or something.
Yeah, you know, and good for him. But I don't know if we need to see this kind of iteration
remember,
of character.
Well, Kate Blanchett's in it now, but do you remember who the original...
Yeah, it was originally going to be... what's her name? Who was dating...
Is it Emily Blunt or is it...
No. I'll tell you. It was what's her name?
Oh, from, Sienna Miller.
G.I. Joe. Yeah. Sienna Miller.
And then she left because they had some problem with Russell Crowe, or Russell Crowe didn't like her.
I can't imagine two easygoing personalities like Sienna Miller and Russell Crowe didn't get along.
Well, I think part of the issue was that Russell Crowe was upset that Sienna Miller, I mean, this is rumors that I heard, that Sienna Miller would make him look too old by comparison to be his romantic lead, and it would look ridiculous. So they got Kate Blanchett, but I don't think they changed any of the dialogue, and it's very weird. There's a very, and again, maybe it's just because it's Kate Blanchett. She's giving off a very Katharine Hepburn vibe.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, but yeah, I like Kate Blanchett to play Kate Blanchett, or you know, whatever her take on this character is.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Robin Hood. I prefer my Robin Hood joyful.
Yes.
Full of
glee.
This
does not look like. Yeah, this does not look like a whimsical Errol Flynn kind of Robin Hood.
Yeah, and funny, we actually mentioned Knight's Tale earlier. It seems like the whole fatherhood storyline is something straight out of Knight's Tale. It's like you could do great things when you're man makes his own destiny and all that nonsense. Anyone else big in this, Rami, besides Russell Crowe and?
I think those are the two big names in the film. I bet if we look here, I'm going to poke around and see if there's anybody else.
The only part of the trailer that really has me vaguely excited is when Sheriff of Nottingham is putting up a wanted poster and he asks for a nail. And then an arrow flings over and the camera pans over to Robin Hood and everyone's laughing and he smirks. And that's very Errol Flynn.
That's solid. Oh, Frank, I was looking at the cast list. I just sold you your ticket. Watch this. Playing Friar Tuck, Mark Addy.
Sold!
There it is. Mark Addy, for those of you who don't know,
Speaking of Knight's Tale.
Yeah, exactly. He's also the bigger fellow in Full Monty.
Yeah, he's David in Full Monty.
And he's Fred Flintstone
in the amazing, amazing Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas.
Wow, we are going to have no listeners at the end of this episode.
You look at that and it's like, what? The first Flintstones movie was terrible. Why would I watch the sequel that involves a space alien?
And you've answered your own question. Why wouldn't you watch that?
It's so much better. It's so good.
Yeah, it's very true to the spirit of the original cartoon.
Yeah, completely off the wall. Very much a cartoon come to life and not like a sad, shambling approximation of it Flintstones was.
We have gone off the grid here.
All
right.
Why is Robin Hood like Viva Rock Vegas?
The other major cast members of the film, Max von Sydow is Sir Walter Loxley.
That's William, good.
Yeah. Mark Strong is in it. William Hurt is in it. Danny Houston is King Richard.
Oh, all right. Yeah, this is a good cast. This is a solid cast. Yeah. I mean, look, Katie, we're not going to not see it. I just think that maybe it's going to feel really, really similar. And I'm actually curious to see, because right off of this, Ridley Scott's doing his Alien prequel, right?
Maybe.
What's coming up? Or the Monopoly movie.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, Ridley Scott is also in talks to direct a movie version of Monopoly.
Yeah.
And you would think that maybe it would be about sin and graft and vice and you know, the terrible things that men do. And he said that that's what draws him to the script is, like, how people turn to monsters while playing Monopoly and how you turn against your own, like, family and friends and you get really resentful of them. And that has the capability to be an interesting dramatic film. However, all the treatments that I've seen online of it describe it as Jumanji meets fake money.
Wow.
Where a person gets sucked into a game of Monopoly.
I think in the...
I don't know why Ridley Scott's directing that movie.
Yeah, that's just so completely bizarre. I think at the end of the day, Frank and I are going to come back from this film, and our favorite Robin Hood movie will still be Errol Flynn, Michael Curtiz directed The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Yeah, and you know what?
And if you've never seen that, please change that as soon as possible.
It is
a future canon entry, I'm sure.
If I had to describe that film in two words, it would be, ha ha!
Well said.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, everyone loves the Disney Robin Hood. I'm kind of soured. Not. You know why? I don't trust animals with weapons.
Oh. Yeah, also the internet kind of ruins anything with anthropomorphic animals for reasons I don't want to get into.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. It's upsetting.
All right. Thanks, Katie. Next question. Our next question comes from Michael Television.
Oh, boy.
Who are the hot stunt people this year? The stunties are coming up, and I really want to nail my ballot this year. Any guesses for best combustion stunt involving an animal? My money's on Zeke Villalobos, but I can totally see Rock Churnson pulling the upset. Anyway, love the show. Michael Television.
Our friends aren't like other people's friends.
I was trying to think about this, Rami. Can you think of a solid combustion stunt involving an animal?
Yes, I can.
Groundhog Day?
No, dude, Frank, in District 9 when they fire that pig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you saw the movie Black Sheep.
I did. There's a lot of, yeah.
Yeah, there's some animal combustion in that, too.
Trying to think what else. I mean,
by the way, I should clarify, this is not the Chris Farley Black Sheep. This is the mutant Australian sheep horror movie Black Sheep.
Clouded with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, yeah, there's some exploding.
Chickens exploding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Granted, they're already dead, but.
Yeah, it was the principle of the thing.
Yeah, I'm going to say best. I'm going to say Clouded with a Chance of Meatballs wins it this year's.
Stunties. I'm also glad that Zoe Bell is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award.
It's a little weird that this is the fifth Lifetime Achievement Award they've given her in a row.
Yeah,
but
people just don't know the names of other stunt people.
Any other stunt people.
Which is a shame, because you think the stunties would know.
No, they do no research.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you, Michael TV.
Yep.
Next question comes from Satchel McDennison.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Oh, it doesn't.
And Satchel wants to know, what isn't your favorite movie? Regards, Satchel McDennison. P.S. And why?
Oh, God. What isn't my favorite movie? That's the question.
What isn't your favorite movie? So you know what, Rami? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Satchel. But I'm going to go out on a limb and twist this around and say, Rami, what is your least favorite movie?
Oh, actually, I do have an answer for that. Yeah, my least favorite movie that I have ever seen it's not even a badly made movie. It's just such a vapid, senseless film. And that is 2000's Vertical Limit that was directed by Martin Campbell, who did the recent, the James Bond reboot. He did, what's it called? With Daniel Craig. The first one.
Quantum of Solace? Casino Royale.
Casino Royale. Yeah, he just did Casino Royale, which is great. I loved it. But this movie that came out about 10 years ago is horrible. It's about a group of climbers a brother and sister pair of climbers. One of them, I think the sister, gets lost in this expedition, and the brother goes and recruits this whole team of people to find them. And it's just so, so, so bad. The characters are constantly compromising their values and making completely stupid decisions. The action is poorly shot. The dialogue is terrible. I hated every single minute of this film. And if I never see it again, it'll be too soon.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I am actually going to go pretty broad on this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I'm looking at this list. Every film that came out in the summer of 2001.
Really?
All
Why
of them.
Why is that?
I remember it as a particularly bad year at the movies.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, certainly. My go-to least favorite film of all time.
Yeah.
Of course, being Jurassic Park 3. Terrible film. Terrible film. Talking raptors.
But see, they don't even have the courtesy to have like amusing British accents, like in that critic sketch.
The Mummy Returns.
Oh yeah, okay.
Scary Movie 2.
Mm.
Rush Hour 2.
It lacked the subtlety and nuance of the first Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rush Hour 2.
Yeah.
Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes.
Oh, a particularly egregious film, yeah.
Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within.
Oh, you paid money to see that.
I did, in theaters. I remember this was the summer that... you know what? Moulin Rouge did come out this summer. I like that.
Uh-huh. You could say that it came out at the end of the summer, borderline fall. So if you want to use that as an excuse.
No. It didn't. It came out early.
Oh, did it?
No, you're right. It came out in like late. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
What else? America's Sweethearts.
Oh, yeah.
Shrek came out. That's, you know, I don't even particularly like Shrek all that much. Well, no, it's good. Shrek is a good movie. It's a well put together movie. And that's probably my favorite movie from that summer. Yeah, it's just a really weak summer for movies. And I remember going to the Sunset, I remember going to Sunset Place AMC 24 pretty mm-hmm. much every weekend that summer and always being angry. Like always, I have vivid memories of just being upset after movies that summer, and talking about how angry I was about everything. So yeah, that will be my my most not favorite movie.
Oh, okay, good stuff. May we never have to see any of them again.
Yeah, here's hoping. Here is hoping.
All right, Frank, what are we looking forward to this week in pop culture?
Well, it's kind of a slow week. You know, we're gearing up for the big summer movie season, which starts with Iron Man 2 next Friday.
Yeah, Iron Man 2.
So I guess I'm going to have to say this week's episode of Fringe.
Okay, what's the deal with this week's episode of Fringe?
Which they've been talking about a lot because it's part of, and again, I've not heard this initiative being heralded anywhere else but on the new Fringe ads, but it's part of Fox Rocks Week,
mm-hmm.
Which is meant to up the profile of Glee and American Idol even more so by inviting several Fox shows to become musicals for a whole episode, and Fringe has really embraced that. And decided to do an entire episode, which takes place in. It's a story being told by Walter. What's his name?
Walter, the actor.
Yeah, it's John Noble's. John Noble's character is Walter.
Peck.
Not Walter Peck.
Kowalski.
Yes, it's true. This man has no.
Bishop.
Walter Bishop, yes. He's the crazy mad scientist, and he's the best thing that show has going for it.
Yes.
Fringe, if you're not aware, is a show from J.J. Abrams as well as...
Orky and Kurtzman.
Yeah, and it's the spiritual successor sort of to X-Files, and it follows a quirky madman who is essentially like a Frankenstein. He and his partner in the 60s did all these insane experiments that unleashed all these strange happenings, and now they're running around gathering them up, and there's all this talk of parallel dimensions and stuff, and it's like a heady sci-fi show, and it's not that heady, it's kind of dumb at times, but John Noble is amazing on it as Walter Bishop, as this very innocent minded, very soft-spoken individual who is kind of loopy. He was in an insane asylum. They find him in an insane asylum, but he's like delightfully mad, you know, which, as we've discussed, I believe on this show, is our favorite type of mad.
Yeah.
And this whole episode is actually a dramatization of a bedtime story that he tells the main character's niece. And it's essentially what he thinks Fringe actually, the TV show Fringe actually is. And it has like Anna Torv, the lead character, as a private investigator, like a Sam Spade private investigator. And there's big sweeping musical numbers. And I always like those altered reality takes on TV shows. And I'm always one for musical episodes as well. So
it sounds like a winning combination.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. I haven't been I've been told Fringe has been getting really, really, really good this season, as it tends to, I guess. It got really solid by the end of last season. Fringe is one of those shows that I'll just pick up, like, over the summer when nothing's on, and
just
watch the entirety of a season on iTunes or something.
It makes sense.
Yeah, but, you know, so I guess I'm looking forward to that. That's tomorrow night at, I believe, 9. Thursday night, excuse me. Thursday at 9.
Yeah, Thursday night, yeah. On Fox. I myself am looking forward to the Blu-ray release of one of my favorite kind of minor but very solid film. That would be George P. Costamassos' Tombstone, which is features a murderer's row of great character actors.
I wouldn't call Val Kilmer a character actor.
He's a movie star. He's
a movie star. Call Val Kilmer a movie star.
I wouldn't call Val Kilmer a...
You know what I would call him?
What?
Mr. Kilmer.
That's right, because we were going to show that guy some respect.
Damn right.
He's good people. Makes friendly phone calls in times of desperation.
Yeah.
Say no more.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Robbie, you can put that in the show notes.
Yeah, fine.
You can put that whole story about how mad Val Kilmer was that one time at me.
Yeah, it's a good story. It's got, you know, it's the story of the OK Corral, but told it with a level of detail that had previously never been captured on film. It's got Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, Charlton Heston, Thomas Hayden Church, Dana Delaney. I mean, a lot of really, 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 really good people in this movie. Lots of great action, lots of great character moments, wonderful dialogue. It's a lot of fun. If you like a good, we're not too far away from Father's Day. Could be a fun gift idea.
Yeah, make that movie your Huckleberry.
Yeah, very nice, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Frank.
I guess that wraps it up for this week's episode, yeah?
Absolutely. If people want to get in touch with us, how might they do that?
You can always email us at cave76podcast@gmail.com, or you could also email our enemies at cave76sucks@gmail.com.
That's right. You could talk to us on Twitter. I'm at thesickness83, not to be confused with fake sickness 83.
And I'm at fake sickness 83.
No, you're not.
I'm at Frank Angones. That's A-N-G-O-N-E-S.
Yes.
And of course, please go to www.sicknesscinema.com. Where you can get the show notes for, we started that last episode, and I think it went really well. Got some positive feedback from that, detailing all the little bits and pieces that we may not have explained entirely on the podcast.
Yes.
With delightful commentary by some schmuck who runs the website.
That's right.
And you can, of course, join our Facebook group, Facebook search for Cave76. You can always subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, and rate us on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Some more of you have been rating, fives and fours. That's what I like to see.
You can write a letter and place it in a bottle.
Yes.
Put that bottle in a rocket.
Yes.
Fill that rocket with all the powers of your imagination and aim it straight for the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And if that works, please email us.
That the rocket thing works.
That the rocket thing works. We'll go check the sun.
Yeah, we'll get the missive with the heading care of the sun.
Yes. we'll be back next week, probably with our first entry in what is sure to be a jam-packed summer season of wonderfulness, and a review of Iron Man 2. Yeah.
Yeah, very
sounds
exciting.
Sounds like a good thing to do.
Sounds like a plan, Frank.
Until next time. Let them all go to hell.
Go to hell.
Except K-76.
We have 5 million Cybermen. How many are you?
4.
You would destroy the Cybermen with 4 Daleks.
We would destroy the Cybermen with 1 Dalek. You are superior in only one respect.
What is that?
You are better at dying. Raise communications barrier.